Robin laid an egg. The Batmobile lost a wheel, and the Joker got away.
All right, it's time to jingle those bells and take a selfie kissing Santa. It is DC Talk episode number 22 here on December the 22nd, 2018. We wanted to make sure that we were somewhat your last hearing voices before the new year began, before you heard your Christmas. So as you are eating your scrumptious Christmas meal this week, I want you to play DC Talk in the background and play that previous song on loop over and over and over again. I am Mike. I'm excited to be here again recording tonight. And I also have with me my trusty co-host, Carrie. What's going on?
I'm a bit disturbed that you want them to be hearing voices over the Christmas holidays, dude. I mean,
you don't hear voices?
I do, and sometimes I do what they tell me to do, but that's me, not you know, the general public. And we all know that I'm not exactly sane, but I hope everyone's I hope everyone's had a nice solstice.
Yeah.
I did.
Well, you know, to quote the great Shia LaBeouf when he was on Even Stevens before he lost his mind, what's living if you never pull your shorts down and slide on the ice? Live a little.
I don't even want to go there. That image is wrong.
Yes, it is. But that is Carrie. But listen, we have a special guest. I'm talking, we went to the top for this episode to bring you the very special guest tonight. We have with us Rusty, but you may know him as Brax on Discord. How are you, man?
Good evening, everybody. Glad to be here.
Glad you could join us. We're going to talk a little bit about Aquaman later, which I cannot wait to get into.
It's nice to be recording with someone else on this side of the country.
Really? Yep. I did not know that. Cool. Cool. So we're going to talk a little bit about Aquaman. That is going to be a spoiler-heavy part of the episode. So if you want to be spoiled, that's fine. But if you don't want to be spoiled, pause it. Come back. Listen to our rant about it afterwards. And after you go see the movie, which you should have already saw it. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Forget Mary Poppins Returns and Bumblebee. Go see Aquaman. And see it in IMAX. The seats rumble and the fight scenes. It's awesome. So we're going to talk a little about that later, but just a couple of network announcements. The first one we got for you is, don't forget, we are going to be recording here in the next couple of days. We're going to be recording our staff movie draft, and that will be out for your listening pleasure. So make sure you get aware of that. And then we're going to be recording. We want you to have a great Christmas on top, or a great holiday on top of just listening to us on DC Talk. What better way than to watch Blade on Caped Chronicles? We're going to be talking about Blade here. We're going to record that tomorrow night. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that will be out for your listening pleasure on Christmas Eve. All right, so when you're gathered around the fireplace with your family, we can all listen to Caped Chronicles talk about vampires and La Magra and everybody else.
Because vampires and Christmas just go together.
Naturally. There is a winter scene in Russia at the end of the movie, so, you know, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from all of us here at DC Talk, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. But you'll get another one of ours before the end of the year anyways. But with all that being said, is there any other announcements I'm missing, Carrie?
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's get back to jingling them bells then tonight with the news.
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Our first bit of DC TV news tonight is Titans Season 2 is reportedly to start filming in February. Really?
Yay.
Close, Carrie.
Yay. Yeah, can we have the new season of Titans now? Like
oh, I would
right
love
now,
that.
Please? Because
I would love that so much.
I mean, we're going to talk about that later, but come on now. Come on. That oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Titans has done very well in its first season, so it's exciting. And before they even aired season one, they had already renewed it for season two. So I'm excited about seeing where season two goes. They definitely set it up toward the end. So actors get about a month and a couple months break, and they're back to filming again. So that's all the Titans news until we get over to the finale discussion. What other kind of news do we have, Carrie?
Well, John Wesley Shipp has teased more 90s Flash in the Arrowverse, so that's going to be fabulous. Basically, someone tweeted that we needed more 90s Barry Allen, and John Wesley Shipp agreed. And he said, "You'll never know. Perhaps more will be revealed in the near future."
Yes, I'm down with that. Have you seen any of the Flash, Brax?
Yeah. Actually, I've been watching all the way up to this point. And I've found it arguably one of the better Arrowverse shows.
Yeah, I agree. Did you ever watch the 90s Flash?
I did. I was a big fan of that because that was so far before the modern era of hero shows that we got later, and it was at that time the best one I'd ever seen. I mean, all the previous attempts were kind of held back by the technology of the day, and the stories weren't quite given the gravitas that I thought they deserved, and that was the first one that seemed to take it really seriously.
Okay. I was excited. I know it's on the DC Universe app. I was excited to see him back in that 90s outfit for the crossover episode. That was really cool to see that out there. So I do hope we see some more John Wesley Shipp. By the way, speaking of the DC Universe, before I know that I'm kind of maybe jumping the gun here, but I believe that the DC Universe dropped the pilot for the Aquaman series back in the early 2000s onto the DC Universe app as well.
They dropped it already?
Yes, I thought they already did. I think they were supposed to do it the day Aquaman came out. I need to check. I do know they have
I'm actually checking right now.
Because why not? They do have their own fireplace for your home kind of thing with the universe Yule log on their app. It's awesome. It's cool. That's cool. Anything else about The Flash, though, Carrie, that we have?
No. I mean, I remember watching bits and pieces of it when it was airing on Sci-Fi years ago. So I'm at some point I do need to go into the DCU app and watch that.
Okay. Well, I'm excited about this next bit of Flash news because I'm a huge fan of this guy on the show. What do we got, Carrie?
Well, the Flash season 5B, that is the second half of season 5 of The Flash, will explore the legacy of Eobard Thawne. And if you remember the episode before the mid-season finale, we know that Nora has been visiting Thawne and possibly working with him in prison. So that's... Yep. That's some heavy stuff that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, it'll be really... I know they said they wanted to dive into that and see what the relationship is there. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on that one. But that's all of our DC TV news, unless anybody else has heard anything else. If not, we're going to move into our DC Universe news.
Well, by the way, I don't see the Aquaman... 90s Aquaman episode on DC Universe. Yeah.
Oh, that is so sad. It'll be on there. It's supposed to be on there by the end of this month. Right. It's supposed to be on there by the end of this month at the very latest. So, but speaking of DC Universe news, Stargirl has apparently been very busy this last week. They have added four people to the cast of Stargirl this last week. The first one is Breck Basinger. She plays Zoe McIntosh on Goldbergs, which, if you don't know, if you've never seen that show, that is hilarious show. I love watching that one. I'm trying to think what else. Do y'all know her from anything else?
No.
No, doesn't seem
no,
familiar.
I don't.
Okay. I know she played she was in Bella and the Bulldogs. I was on Nickelodeon, but she's kind of a younger star. So that'd be interesting. So Breck Basinger was signed on this week as well for that. And then we had Joy Osmansky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of anything she was in. I know she's on the Santa Clarita Diet.
She was in iZombie, dude. I mean, you're talking about iZombie all the time, and you don't remember.
But she was only in one episode. Oh.
Well, she's only in one episode of Lucifer, too. And, yeah, I'm giving you a hard time because of the iZombie thing.
She was also in the show Freakish on Hulu. I watched about four episodes of that, and I got bored with it and just stopped watching it. I don't know anywhere else she's on, so that'll be interesting to see what she's going to... but those three actually are going to be the three members of the Injustice Society. And Stargirl.
Wait, you mentioned one of them. Where are the other two?
Well, the other one is Neil Hopkins.
And?
And do you know who Neil Hopkins is?
Vaguely. He looks familiar. I don't remember.
Rusty, do you know where Neil Hopkins is placed from? One of the best shows in the world?
That name does sound familiar, but I'm not placing him.
All right. He played Liam Pace in Lost. He played Charlie's brother in Lost.
Okay, yeah, he does look familiar, but
yep.
we've discussed how far into Lost I got.
Yep. So that was back in 2000. He played him a couple times in the show Lost. Other than that, he was in Grimm. He was in a couple other ones. He wasn't really in anything else big, but he's been cast as part of the Injustice Society. And then Nelson Lee. Know where Nelson was from?
He was on the Blade TV series, apparently.
Yes, he was. He was on the Blade TV series.
And he's going to be playing the dragon. He's going to be in the upcoming Mulan live-action movie.
Yep. He was also in Lethal Weapon in one episode. I enjoy Lethal Weapon, so that was good to see some Lethal Weapon love getting a shout-out. Anybody, Rusty, you know from anywhere else?
No, nothing coming up. I need to start putting IMDb in the background, I think.
Yeah, that's typically what I do.
You and me both, dude. Some of these I can get away with knowing off the top of my head. A lot of them, no, though.
So, Osmansky is going to be playing Tigress in the Injustice Society. Hopkins will be playing Lawrence Crusher Croc, or also known as Sportsmaster. And then, so it'd be really cool to see him. And then Lee will be playing the Dragon King in the upcoming Stargirl. So I'm excited about seeing Stargirl. But speaking of Stargirl and all the other shows, Carrie, apparently,
yes.
What do we have?
So DC Universe release dates for 2019 original TV shows has been updated. And let's see, release dates. I know that, the first thing on the docket for next year is Young Justice Outsiders, which will be about the middle of January. And
yep.
This is what happens when I don't read the notes ahead of time, guys.
Dang
Sorry.
It, Carrie.
Doom Patrol will be premiering on February 15th. By the way, did you guys see the teaser?
Yes. Hilarious.
That was funny. A Swamp Thing will be on May 10th. Happy birthday to me. Stargirl on August 9th. And Harley Quinn will be premiering on October 11th.
All right.
So...
Are you looking forward to any of these, Rusty?
I am, especially Swamp Thing, and I'll tell you why. Mainly because, according to DC lore, he's supposed to be one of the most powerful entities on Earth, just because of the fact that, he basically is Earth. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, if they treat him or give him that sense of depth and power. Or are we going to get something a little bit closer to the Swamp Thing movies that we saw way back when? I hope it's not the latter.
Well, there was I know there was a TV series at some point. I want to say it's in the it was in the 80s or 90s. I remember it coming up on Sci-Fi every once in a while back in like the early, you know, 2000s or so. And he did get kind of a shout out in one of the last Legends of Tomorrow episodes. John semi name dropped him. Constantine, he semi name dropped him.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, out of these four, so you have Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, Stargirl, and Harley Quinn, which is going to be, we know it's going to be an animated one. Are there any of these four that kind of worry you about making out of their first season?
No, not really.
Nah, I think they have an equal shot. I mean, you know, with the first season of any show is always kind of precarious. I mean, it really depends on how they come at the characters, how they portray them, and how they resonate with the fans. And if they are able to put together something, I think that that folks are kind of hungry for, you know, it'll get them past that first season. And then, of course, in the second season, the impetus is on them to really deliver as far as really content. But that first one is really just to hook them and make sure that they're in.
Yeah. I you know, I was looking over them. I think the only one that I would worry about would be Doom Patrol. Because it is a lot of those characters are unknowns to a lot of people watching. A lot of people, when you say Titans, they know who you're talking about. When they say Swamp Thing, they realize who they're talking about, somebody down in Louisiana. When you say Stargirl, they at least have a vague recollection, if they know anything from Arrowverse, of Stargirl and obviously Harley Quinn. I think Doom Patrol is going to have the most work to make their season really make it and really mean it to get people hooked. I think they're going to be the ones that, if they would struggle, I think it would be Doom Patrol, but I don't foresee that happening.
Well, I think for television shows, it's absolutely a different formula. But we did see something similar happen in the Marvel universe with Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, they were relatively unknown, right. and they found a formula that was really popular and resonated with folks, whether they were familiar with them or not. So it is doable. It is possible. It's just, it really depends on how they come at it.
Yeah. But speaking of Doom Patrol, Carrie already read the premiere date, but did you guys happen to watch the trailer and see the posters?
Oh yeah, those characters? Were great.
the trailer to me was funny. It's just a simple, if you haven't had a chance, you need to go watch it. But the character posters, I think a lot of people worried about Cyborg on screen, about how much CGI and how many effects they're going to have to do to get Cyborg to really work on screen with the money. But from what I saw on the trailer, they seem to have done a pretty good job at making him look like Cyborg.
Yeah, he looks a bit closer to the Teen Titans animated series Cyborg than he does to like the Justice League Cyborg. He's not quite as there's more practical effects to this Cyborg than the movieverse version. So I think it's going to work, especially with him and Brendan Fraser's character, Robot Man.
Okay.
Is that him? Is that the character's name?
Yeah, Robot Man.
Yeah. I think between the two of them, it's going to be rather interesting to see how that works.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be good. I think it'll be good. What's our last bit of DC Universe news, Carrie?
Okay, so this is something you mentioned to me just before we started recording. I was swamped with work this week, so I didn't see a whole lot of the news and stuff. Sorry, guys. But apparently, Young Justice Outsiders is going to turn Aqualad into a major DC superhero. He's going to take on the mantle of the new Aquaman. in the third season. So that is going to be kind of cool.
So for all those who are wondering why, the description is given, and it's happened in the and it happened in the comics too. But the description is given that Aquaman is having a hard time juggling his Justice League duties as well as his kingly duties of Atlantis. So to help relieve that struggle and focus more on as being a king of Atlantis, he's going to pass the mantle of Aquaman over to Cal on Young Justice, which I'm binging the first season right now. I mean, yeah. I'm binging it in between. So I just finished Voltron.
Mm-hmm.
Very disappointed in season 8. And then I was going to start Daredevil because everybody tells me I need to watch it. But
well,
since
you
I know
do,
it's in,
but if you're going to
right,
if, but you should probably rewatch Young Justice first. If
but then Marvel, but then Marvel Runaways, but then Marvel Runaways came out Friday. So
yeah,
now Daredevil,
and the entire season dropped all at once this time, which is weird.
Yeah. So Daredevil got pushed back to the back burner again to watch Marvel Runaways because since they're not making another Daredevil, I know I'm in no hurry to watch it now. And I've only got a limited amount of time before all the shows come back from their winter break to binge everything that's sitting in my queue. But good job, Aqualad.
Yeah.
So moving out of our DC Universe news, so
the general news?
If you did not know, apparently Scooby-Doo is a DC-owned property. Now, I remember watching
Scooby-Doo. I was not completely aware of this, actually.
Me neither. I really did not know either. Apparently, DC Comics bought Scooby-Doo and the rights to all those characters and created a comics line called called Scooby Apocalypse. Okay.
As one does.
Yes, as one does. So I remember watching Scooby-Doo, and I remember watching a pup named Scooby-Doo as a kid growing up.
The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never in a million years did I expect this news to hit that Scooby-Doo's Shaggy is going to be a father.
Yeah, I'm afraid.
And apparently, the mama is Velma.
I'm really afraid.
Yikes.
Jinkies.
What would Scrappy think of that?
I really don't know. Apparently, the whole issue largely revolves around the team rescuing Daphne from a zombified Fred.
Oh boy.
Oh,
well,
my.
Daphne always needed rescuing from somebody.
Yeah, apparently Scooby is supposed to be like a cyborg dog in this comic story. I don't even know, but I don't know. Can we just go back to the original Scooby-Doo?
I really want to know what the writers have been smoking. I mean, I know it was the creator of Scooby-Doo said definitively at one point that no, Shaggy and Scooby really are not stoners. But come on. What are they smoking that this is where they went with... Okay.
It's all them Scooby snacks. We're
laced
with
some
stuff.
It's all them Scooby snacks.
That would explain a lot.
Yes. So that's one of our last news item. Carrie, I love this last news item because
I do too.
Either way it could have gone, I would have been okay. But I am even more excited about this one. So please tell us this last news item.
Ah, yes. So data proves that DC's Darkseid would destroy Thanos, even with the Infinity Gauntlet. So Marvel fans, suck it. Just kidding. I love Marvel too, but
I know. So
come on.
Apparently, Thanos lost because when he left the reality to go after Darkseid, the Infinity Stones only work in the reality that Thanos is where he got those stones from. So they became powerless when he went over to where Darkseid is. Even his little snaps didn't work because remember, Darkseid could create multiple copies, in essence, of himself.
Mm-hmm.
So every time he snapped, all he did was kill the copy, not the actual Darkseid. So the guys who did this are called Death Battle. They're over there on Screw Attack. They have a YouTube channel. And they talk to writers, creators, comic book designers, other artists, other superhero fanatics, all those kind of things at comic conventions, everything else. I mean, they get a ton of data, and they run simulators multiple times. Did any of you ever watch the show Deadliest Warrior?
Yeah,
no,
I have seen that.
Okay, so they would usually run something like 1,000 times a simulator. And the one who had the highest percentage would be the one who they think would win the battle. And that's kind of what they do here on Death Battle, too. So Thanos ended up beating, Darkseid ended up beating Thanos in this battle. So I was excited about that. It was a good week all around for DC. DC knocked it out of the park this week.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I love me some Thanos, but I don't think the verdict was ever really, really in dispute as to which one of those two would come out on top.
Yeah, I don't think Grimace was gonna win over Darkseid on this one.
Mm. Ouch! You mean Super Skrull?
Yeah. or I don't know, the evil purple Teletubby. I don't know.
Evil purple Teletubby. Oh my! Was there any other news that you guys saw before we started recording?
Like I said, I've been kind of swamped with work this week, so my ability to see news has been limited, so I didn't see anything else that was newsworthy.
Yeah, we're probably not going to get a lot of news this next week either.
Yeah,
just
probably
being
not
the weekend it is. But knowing DC, they probably will drop some news. Anyways, if that's all our news, let's go ahead and move into our DC TV discussion. So we have our last episode to record or to talk about before they come back, or for all the other shows come back in the winter. But we have our season finale of Titans, season 1, episode 11, called Dick Grayson. I do not have the summary here, but pretty much the whole summary revolves around we don't really find out about it until the end, but we kind of get the general consensus that Dick is in an illusion in his mind. Once he entered into the house from last week,
yeah, it kind of played out like a choose your own adventure type story gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, it was wow. So it was apparently a future illusion. Was it 5 years into the future?
Yeah.
And Trigon was creating it in order to get Dick to Gotham. And also to confront Bruce, because there was something else that he wanted him to confront about. But when he gets there, he realizes that Corey now works for the FBI.
Yep.
I did like how when he went to Gotham, all the big villains and Batman's face was hidden the whole time. So they didn't actually have an actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had actors, but they didn't actually show it, which is what I was hoping for last week when we talked about it, Carrie, that they
yeah.
would just show him.
Yeah.
That they would just... so we had Riddler, we saw his arms all tattooed up. We saw Two-Face.
We saw Puppet Master. Well, we saw the puppet. We saw the puppet, but not the...
The Master.
The Master. Although
we saw Joker.
The puppet's the actual villain.
True.
Kind of, sort of.
So the whole point was... Bruce is going on a rampage as Batman because Barbara's missing, Commissioner Gordon is now dead by Joker, and Batman's just lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, he's tired. So he's on a vengeance path to kill Joker.
Well, I think the whole point of the entire illusion was to get Dick to a place where he was willing to kill Batman.
Right, to embrace that
to embrace
that,
yeah,
the darkness.
To embrace, to take that one last step over into the dark side, which is basically what he did. And oh hell, that yeah.
Batman went off the edge. That's for sure. Batman went into Arkham Asylum and just murdered guards and all the villains. I mean, and then when they went to the mansion to take control of him, to try to get him, he killed all the cops that were there. He killed all the FBI agents that were there. I mean,
yeah,
he went to town.
But see, we got to that point, and I kept thinking, you know, this is going way beyond worst case scenario with Bruce, with Batman. I mean, this is like, to get him to a point where he was willing to kill cops, that took it a bit farther than I really expected it to go, and I really was waiting for Dick to kind of snap out of it and say, and realize that there was really, that this was a place that Batman would never actually go.
Yeah.
I can see Batman getting to a point where he would be willing to kill Joker. I cannot see him getting to a point where he's willing to blow up a whole bunch of cops.
Yeah. But I do think that Batman is the only thing keeping Gotham crime at bay, from what they were showing in this illustration. But because once Batman was done, then crime just came right out. But that was just one thought. Jason Todd finally got his bell rung by Riddler.
Jason Todd admitting to being too cocky was like the first part where I was like, okay, this really is a fantasy world. Dick needs to wake up now. Dick really needs to wake up and figure out that this is not actually happening. And I kept... And because Dick is always portrayed to be an even better detective than Batman is supposed to be, I really, really expected him to figure this out. And I'm kind of disappointed that he didn't.
Yeah. Did you catch the piano opening to the Batcave?
I did.
That was a very nice callback.
That was a very nice callback. I also saw aspects of The Killing Joke, Dark Knight Returns, and No Man's Land in this.
Yeah.
The description of how they found Gordon was kind of sort of reminiscent of what little I know about The Killing Joke. And of obviously the Batman going off the deep end and killing the Joker is kind of out of Dark Knight Returns. We discussed that last week, and the whole Gotham turning into basically like, you know, sixth level of hell is kind of sort of part of No Man's Land, but without the earthquakes or the Gotham version of, you know, buildings being blown up and stuff.
Well, any other notes you got?
Okay, the Dick's fantasy relationship is just weird, but I recognize that's mostly because I don't see him with anyone other than Barbara or Corey.
Okay.
I don't see him with Dawn at all, and that just is like, no, that's weird. I'm kind of running on the theory that we don't see Donna because Trigon doesn't really know much about her. If he's working off of what Rachel knows, then that's the reason why Donna's not there.
I just want y'all to know Rusty is like waiting patiently to get to Aquaman right now.
Yeah, Rusty, we're sorry. We're almost... You totally do. It is so good.
And then the let's talk about the end real quick. I thought it was a great finale.
Oh, yeah.
I think the setup to season two is absolutely amazing with Dick being caught
evil
by the darkness.
Eva, yeah.
So that's going to be, I think Raven's going to be the one to save him and bring him back, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Well, also we have the two heaviest hitters outside the house still.
Which is
Corey
Donna.
And Donna are both still outside.
So Wonder Girl and Starfire are on the outside looking in and cannot get in to save him.
Yeah. So
and
between
then,
the three of them, and then we have
on
another
top of that,
heavy hitter coming.
We have, after the credits, we have a lovely sneak peek at the next season. We have Superboy and
Crypto. Because
so,
why not? I mean,
who needs
Cyborg and Titans when you got Superboy, man?
So I was right that we were going to have an appearance. I did not. I thought it was going to be Cyborg. But we were going to have somebody show me. It just happened to be Superboy. I'm okay with Superboy over Superman, to be honest. I really am. Crypto, I don't really care. He could have left the dog in the box. I hate superpowered animals.
Unless they're, you know, Beast Boy, I guess.
Beast Boy's okay, but come on, you have Crypto, a dog with a cape. I just don't.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was done. Oh, well. Anything else, Carrie, about Titans?
As I said at the beginning of the episode, can we get season two of Titans now?
Yeah,
now, please. I really wasn't expecting them. I should have expected a cliffhanger, knowing that they had a season two already greenlit. I wasn't expecting it to end there.
Yeah, when I looked at the timing, I was like, "Holy crap!" All right. I did not realize I was that far into the movie, because when they had gone and he was finally storming the castle, I was at 32 minutes into the episode. I'm like, "Holy crap!" This is like
exactly.
Really, this is wow. But that's how that shows me how good, if a show can get me that far in and that immersed before I pull out and realize where I'm at, that's a good show to me.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And they did a good job. Any other news then about Titans before moving to our discussion for this week that everybody's just wanting to hear?
No, I think we've kept Brax waiting long enough.
All right, we're going to move into our discussion now. So this is your warning. This is your absolute warning. If you do not want to hear about Aquaman, you need to turn it off right now, go watch Aquaman in IMAX, and then come back and listen to us. It's not going to be an in-depth, you know, hour-long conversation. We're going to talk about what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it, some of the cool aspects about it, what we think it kind of sets up for the future, and whatnot. So this is your last warning.
Here there be spoilers, guys.
Yes.
Turn back now.
All right. Aquaman. Holy crap. That was
a
good movie.
That was fun.
I want to see it again. I literally, when I left the theater, I'm like, can I go get another ticket to go back in and watch it?
I definitely need to go see it again. I think there's some stuff I missed the first. I know there's stuff I missed the first time, so I need to go see it again. Hopefully this week, if not maybe next weekend, I'll get around to it. I got some stuff I gotta take care of this week.
Rusty, what about you? What did you think about it?
That was good.
I walked out of that theater feeling absolutely fantastic, because for one, the movie was outstanding. And secondly, it wasn't the kind of outstanding where you think to yourself, you know, I love this, but you didn't get that background feeling like, well, maybe not everybody would. this just seems like something that's going to appeal to anybody who has any passing interest in hero movies whatsoever. This, as far as I'm concerned, is the definition of a hero movie.
Right.
Yeah, I like that you did need to have seen the other DCU movies. It would
now, they did give a callback.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Now, I was wondering if you picked up on that when he was talking to Mira for the first time. She said, you know, you've already beaten Steppenwolf, so at least we know generally the timeline of this movie.
So, I like that. I like the timeline, but the problem, I did have a problem with them name-dropping Steppenwolf because now I want to know where the mother box was hidden and who was guarding it, because obviously it wasn't in the city of Atlantis, because I think Arthur would have remembered going to that city.
Well, wasn't Mira in? She was in Justice League.
Yes, she was.
Right. So it had to have been on an off location where it wouldn't hurt Atlantis. So
unless it was her dad's kingdom, maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe it was her dad's kingdom. They don't really explain that, and that was one of the, I would say, well, that's one of the downsides, is there's this niggling in my mind going, okay, so where was the mother box this entire time if it wasn't in that big shiny city somewhere?
Yeah, they didn't do a really good job of separating the different Atlantean peoples in their separate kingdoms. So I mean, the looks of a couple of them were pretty similar. So it's possible that it could have been there since Mira was there. That would make sense.
Speaking of Mira, she was definitely one of my pros in this movie.
Oh yeah, she was awesome.
Mira was phenomenal. She is definitely what you would call, she definitely had the ability of water kinesis, or we could really call it water sorcery. If you really call it water sorcery, if you want. And for those who are shipping it as a very cheap romance, understand that Arthur and Mira actually marry in the comics and in the TV series, in the cartoon, and they,
actually, they pretty much get married in every iteration of the story.
They're king and queen of Atlantis.
They got together even faster in Throne of Atlantis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to know how quickly, or to see that relationship, how it's bloomed, check out Young Justice season 1, where Aqualad goes back to Atlantis because he's homesick. And then he sees his Gar, his buddy, and I can't remember her name now, the girl he likes.
Mm-hmm.
But Mira, definitely a plus for me. The way they did the water around her, the effects in general were out of this world on this movie.
The effects for underwater were really good. I half expected those to take me out of the movie, but the effect that we've gotten to a point with effects that, I mean, I don't think you could have made this movie 10 years ago and had it not look cheesy.
I think you could tell at some points the CGI was a little, you could tell, could definitely tell.
You could tell, but it was less noticeable than it would have been maybe 10 years ago.
But what do you expect? I mean, you can't have people swimming underwater.
Exactly. Or talking underwater.
Right.
That was one of the points that I thought was interesting, is that they took the tact of having them talk underwater instead of going through the trouble of having to create a sphere of atmosphere every time they needed to talk, as they did in Justice League. I read something about that. The director just said, "Hey, man, we're overthinking this. Just have them talk." I, for a second, that kind of took me out of it, because it was a departure from what we'd seen. But I don't think there's any way they could have done it otherwise. You know, creating a bubble every time they wanted to talk would have been very distracting.
Weird.
So it was a good way to go.
Yeah.
What do you think about the cities, the view of the cities themselves, like the visuals? Because to me, it had a Tron / Guardians of the Galaxy kind of vibe when I was watching it.
Actually, and this is going to be more for Brax than Mike, because I know Mike probably hasn't seen it, but I kept thinking The Abyss.
It did kind
it
of
looked,
had
it, that's
that flavor,
the city,
yeah.
The city looked like the alien ship from The Abyss.
Just with a lot more traffic.
And Mike doesn't know, it has no idea what we're talking about right now.
No,
so.
Never seen The Abyss.
That's okay. This is why Brax is recording with us tonight, because he
but
knows
the colors, but the colors remind me a lot of Tron. The way that, right. So I like I said, I was in IMAX when I watched it. So the colors was just, I mean, it just, wow. And whenever there was a fight scene, I would feel the vibration in the seat from the sound. So it almost made you feel like you were there in the fight. So it was really good to me. I thought the effects were great. The visuals were great. All those people who were complaining about, we had a nine minute trailer, at one point that gave away.
It didn't
away
give
weight.
Anything away.
Oh no, it gave
nothing
away. It barely scratched the surface of what we saw in this movie.
Now,
so I think
that
the visuals
said,
were great.
There was a lot going on, and I kind of wish they had taken a little more time to explain the different realms of Atlantis, rather than, you know, flashing here and there. And as Brax said, you know, they didn't really explain the Seven Kingdoms all that well.
They did in a real quick flyby. They said that when the seven, remember, he asked about why you can't have the bridge. So he kind of did, she did a flyby of there were seven. These ones went here. These ones went here. These ones became bottom feeders. These ones were trench dwellers. And these ones evolved into, so she kind of did like a quick flyby of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't a big explanation. I think they were kind of waiting to show you instead.
Yeah,
so.
She did a quick touch on every one of them, I think, as a really good setup to the fact that we would be seeing each one of these in turn as the movie went on, so they didn't come out of the blue.
So let's see, a couple other parts I really liked. I liked when they jumped out of the plane into the desert. That was, gotta love them redheads, and just jumps out.
Yep.
And then they got into the cave, and he said, I could have just peed on it.
Well, that was from the trailer. We knew
right,
about
right.
that
Right, but it was
one.
Nice to see it in context there, though. It,
yeah,
it made
seeing
it funnier
in context
to me.
Was
see,
even
I was a little disappointed in the fact that was in the trailer, because that would have been a really great moment, I think, to have just experienced for the first time in the movie, context and all. As it was kind of spoiled in that you knew it was coming
right.
in the cave. And it would have, I think, had a little bit more impact had you not known, you know, that line was coming. But, I mean, it still worked. I loved it. But I was kind of taken out by the fact that it's like, oh, I've kind of already seen this.
And then the selfie with the big burly guys.
that was awesome.
With the pink cell phone case. The humor was the right amount in this movie.
The humor was great.
It wasn't too much.
I loved Arthur played the kind of the dumb guy, and then, you know, occasionally surprising Mira with, you know, him knowing all these various things like the history and stuff like that. That was awesome. Can we talk about the Carthan for a second?
The what?
The big sea monster at the end.
Oh wow.
Wow. This is something I mentioned a couple of times today. So it was kind of known that Julie Andrews didn't come back for Mary Poppins Returns. And my response was, that's because we got her. That was Julie Andrews playing voicing the sea monster.
Well, speaking about the sea monster, I liked the way, and I know some people are going to be really upset that they didn't see him fight that monster. I like the way that he got the trident.
Oh yeah, me too.
By realizing he's not worthy to hold it, and he did humble himself. It's finally, it's nice to see him, his arrogance at the beginning of this movie and in Justice League get shattered and get humbled at the end of this movie, because you see the development of the hero himself.
Well,
and because of that, he didn't feel worthy. That's why King Atlan let go of the trident, and he was able to hold it.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, okay, so he had a bit of arrogance. He had a bit of a chip on his shoulder from basically having been abandoned by his mom, and then, you know, abandoned, basically, you know, shunned by his mom's people because he's a half-breed. So I get that part, but he never came off to me as needing as feeling like he was deserving to rule anything. He never came off to me as thinking that he was worthy of, you know, or deserved to be king of Atlantis. Everything he was about was not wanting to be king. And him realizing that, I think he knew that he wasn't going to win that fight.
I think some of it owned to the fact, and this kind of ties to a different or different parts of the movie, in that the further along we went in the undersea sequences where he was up against challenges, and he found out through hard experience that in certain aspects he was kind of out of his element. He wasn't as familiar with the rules and the environment. So he, in his own words, said he was getting his ass kicked all the way through this movie, or all the way through their experiences. So I think what you saw there was kind of a learning experience that while he was a denizen of the undersea environment, he was by no means its master. There were a lot that he had to learn, and the fact that he was reluctant to be king, didn't really want to be king, but knew that it was something that had to be done for the benefit of everyone on the planet, he was willing to make that sacrifice. And I think that that too kind of struck the giant creature as far as, you know, his humble and basically his attitude towards why he wanted this trident, because nothing else would have succeeded as it hadn't for centuries prior.
Right. And plus the fact that he could understand her, when no one's been able to since King Atlan. That kind of swayed her a bit.
That did play into it, and that was another thing that I really appreciated about the movie, was that it would have been really easy for them to take the quote-unquote talk to the fish power and really either go over the top with it, overuse it, or, you know, it could have easily come off as hokey. But in this presentation, they used it judiciously only when needed, and they used it really well, I thought.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
I agree. I liked another thing I liked. I really liked the suits that the Atlanteans wore outside of the water, the white suits. They looked really good for those visuals. But speaking of Atlantean, let's talk about Manta for a second.
Who is not Atlantean? He's human.
But he had Atlantean technology, is what
I'm
saying.
Yeah, because he was working for Orin.
Right, but let's talk a little bit
Orin's
about
a bit of a,
about
oh he was
Black Manta.
Awesome.
Was everything I would have expected. I mean, the look was spot on. The attitude was spot on. I thought the way they introduced the human aspect of the character and the motivation for why he's an enemy was handled really well.
And it definitely is true. Many heroes create their own villains. So he created that villain.
Oh yeah. by
we definitely
saving...
know that that's not the end of Black Manta. He will definitely be back if you watch the mid-credit scene. So
yep.
That's interesting. And I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they said it seemed like they tried to put too many enemies into one. And I'm like, well, no. I said what they did is they put a little bit to continue the thread for the next couple movies, because you know they're going to make this a trilogy. They're as much of a success as this movie is. So what they did is they started the thread with Black Manta. That's going to be an episode, a movie two or three. And they're going to have it, if it's not an episode, I mean a movie two, they're going to have that thread continue through that movie until you get to three, to the build-up. But then you're still going to have, I still don't think that fight between Arthur and Orin is done.
No, not
no.
That long.
Well, I don't know that
could be in movie two or movie three. So you still have those two loose threads, and I think that was done purposefully.
I just love the fact that they don't kill off their bad guys. That's
well,
awesome.
Yeah, that too. That's great. I don't know the adversarial nature of Arthur's relationship with Orin. May not be over. I kind of got the sense that Orin was kind of backing down a bit, especially when he realized that his mom was still alive.
Yeah, but I don't think he's done though.
I don't think he's done. I think there's still a bit of an adversarial relationship there, but I'm not sure that he's going to be as much of a threat as maybe Manta is going to be next time around.
I do like the quote. He said, "When you're ready to talk, I'll be here."
Yeah.
But I think, and I don't know, I kind of draw analogies every now and then to Marvel, and I know I shouldn't. What I saw a Thor-Loki relationship right there in that moment.
I can see that.
Where I don't think Orm's going to be through the whole, you know, shenanigans of DCU, but I kind of saw that nice little nod to that.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of DCU, a lot of people thought this was going to be a soft reboot of the whole universe, because they thought, because with the whole issue with Snyder and Whedon, that this was going to be a nice way to kind of reboot everything. If this was the soft reboot they were looking for, number one, I think they did a good job at calling it back, that even though it is kind of a reboot of everything, we still recognize the past DCEU movies as part of this universe, but we are going to retool some things differently. And I think if this was the reboot they were looking for, I think they knocked it out of the park. To start the set off with.
I think this gives them the opportunity, and I agree with, you know, the potential soft reboot analogy. This gives them the ability to grab the threads of the DC universe that in the movies anyway, that have worked well, and to maybe downplay or minimize the parts that haven't worked so well. One of those just being the totally dour and dark tone of the movies. I think this one has gone a long way towards proving that you can have a bit of a lighter tone and still have an excellent movie.
Right.
Which isn't to say I haven't enjoyed the darker tone of DC, but yeah, I agree that a little more lightness is very helpful here.
I've enjoyed it too. The problem is, I think it's not a universal appeal.
Yeah, I know. I can be dark and gloomy.
So I appreciate, another universe like Spawn is, you know, one of my favorites. So I appreciate the darkness.
I mean, we talk about visuals too. I really liked the callback to his orange suit with his orange shirt and green pants. I like the way they did it in this movie. They didn't make it like the really bright orange that you're used to in the cartoons. And like the really bright green, you have that nice kingly, and the way they kind of flared out where his forearms were and that kind of thing. I think that scene, I don't know, we kind of saw it in the trailer, but you really didn't see it until you saw it in the movie in the full frame. But when you finally just saw that, I mean, to me, that scream, that's Aquaman. To me, Aquaman, I've always struggled with in comics and in the cartoons, because I'm like, who cares? He's a guy who talks to fish. Get in the water, he'll fight you. This movie made me love Aquaman. This movie turned me around. Like, dude, Aquaman is pretty cool.
Now,
but
now,
they had to find the right. They had to find the. To me, they had to find the right actor, and they had to find the right motivation and way to make the movie. But they made Aquaman interesting to me. Now I want to get on DC Universe app and I want to read Aquaman comics. So to me, they sold me and made me want to dig deeper into this guy's history and in comic books. And to me, that's a good story. That's a good movie when they can do that to you.
I think, though, if they would have tried to portray him as the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, demigod-looking Caucasian type that Aquaman had always been portrayed as before, I'm not sure it would have worked quite as well. I think Jason Momoa really brings something unique to the role, kind of takes it in another direction, a direction that I think, you know, nobody has any problem buying. I mean, the first time you saw him as Aquaman, you just said, yeah, I totally get that. That works.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I kind of get the whole Aquaman has never been cool aspect. I mean, I didn't like Aquaman because he was cool. I liked him because he talked to fish, and I was kind of into like, you know, oceanic stuff when I was a kid. But yeah, Aquaman kind of became cool for me in the 90s when they grew out his hair, gave him the goatee, and then the harpoon hand. So he became a lot more surly and stuff. So Jason Momoa's Aquaman kind of turns that aspect up to 11 and then gives him a little more humor.
Well, there's actually talk of giving him that harpoon hand in the next couple of movies.
Oh, that would be awesome. I cannot wait for that.
I'm hoping they wait till number 3, on that one. If they do it. What did y'all think about the music in the movie?
I really like the music.
And the soundtrack.
I need to get my hands on that at some point.
Yeah, that was good. Now, the one part that kind of jumped out to me was yet another take on Africa, the original Toto song.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, the Weezer version sounded so similar to the original, I wondered why they even bothered. But this one was different enough to where I could appreciate the differences. I still like the original better. I'm a child of the 80s, sorry, that's when my musical taste pretty much peaked. But that said, I immediately recognized the melody, and then I started hearing the lyrics, and I was like, oh, well, that's Africa, and that's a different take on it. That's not bad.
So I won't be posting the death metal version in Discord for you, Drax?
How about the acapella version? I've heard that, and that was pretty awesome.
Ooh. Well, did any of y'all have anything else great, good about the movie? Things that something that you enjoyed that was.
Okay, so this is kind of for you, Mike, because
come on,
can we all just sit back and appreciate that they cast John Rhys Davies as the voice of the Brine King? So he's basically voicing an oceanic dwarf. King, come on! I mean, it's like almost typecasting at this point that he's playing yet another dwarf.
I'm sure the irony wasn't lost on him.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm sure it wasn't. I hope not.
I did see, and I did consult IMDb before I jumped on here. There were a couple of interesting tidbits I thought that were worth mentioning. From what I saw, Nicole Kidman had originally been offered the role of Hippolyta in Wonder Woman and turned it down. It didn't list exactly why, but she took the role of Atlanta, because of her admiration for the director, James Wan, and his work. Apparently has worked with him before and really likes what he does. But what sealed the deal, apparently, was the fact that he told her that she'd be wearing the Mother of Pearl and would be a mermaid warrior. That sold her on it.
Yeah, well, I loved her fight scene at the beginning. That was just awesome.
Well, Nicole Kidman tore it up in the whole movie. When you did see her. So, bravo to her.
Yeah, bravo.
I mean, she just...
And another little tidbit. During the duel between Arthur and Orm, You saw the octopus playing drums, which I thought was maybe a little hokey at the time, but then I did some reading and found that it actually had some historical note to it. This octopus apparently has a name, which is Topo, and was Aquaman's octopus sidekick in the 50s and 60s comics.
Wow.
I wasn't familiar with that. I thought that they were throwing in like a dig at Little Mermaid or something when I saw that. Because there's an octopus playing the drums in Little Mermaid.
Exactly. Well, I had to find out about that one just to make sure it wasn't, you know, some kind of a cheap pass at Little Mermaid like that.
Yeah. Well, can we address that? What was that, Mike?
I have to ask this real quick. Okay. Yeah. Who do you like? How do you like Nicole Kidman? Who she portrayed better? Do you like her portrayed as Atlanta, or do you like her Dr. Chase Meridian in Batman Forever?
You really have to ask me that. do you want extra editing on this podcast?
No, I don't want to have to seriously, beat you this Mike? Time.
Okay. Also, can we stop and appreciate that Digimon Hansu is kind of doing voices all over the place for the DCU right now because he is Korath in he's Shazam. He's voicing Shazam, and then he voiced King Riku in this movie, so he's kind of straddling the DC and Marvel universes right now.
So all good for him.
Yeah, so all the people who think that actors can't be in both universes at the same time, you're wrong.
Yep. Well, is there anything that you didn't like about the movie? The only con I really got is to me it was too short. I understand it was a little over 2 hours. I could have watched that movie forever.
That movie definitely passes.
They could have gone another hour, and I was sad.
Yeah, it definitely passes the watch test. Not once did I feel like, oh my gosh, is this still going on? No, I could have been.
It was crap. It's almost over.
Yeah, no, I really would have appreciated it if they had fleshed out the realms of Atlantis a little more, and just. For, you know, the sake of continuity, however much you care about that, just kind of explained where the mother box was in relationship to the city of Atlantis proper.
Well, they probably could in the next couple movies if they decide to go further. Yeah, they could spend some time in a couple of the other kingdoms, you know, like the Kingdom of the Trench, you know, hang out down there at the party.
Yeah, because that was the thing. It was like, but, and he's never seen, but, okay.
Yeah. What about you, Rusty? What is you think there's anything that they probably could have done better in the movie?
Oh, you know, that's another one of the things that I walked out of the theater thinking was that they hit all the notes that I was expecting. The tone was, you know, right where I thought it should be. I mean, there was nothing about this movie that I walked out thinking, wow, that just didn't quite work, or that just, you know, didn't come off as believable, or that took me out of the, you know, out of the immersion. No, it totally held my attention. It struck all the right notes. I enjoyed it from beginning to end. And again, I mean, I mentioned this before, the only disappointment that I really had was that there were a few moments that I thought worked really well, and you know, there was a little humor involved in the movie that were given away in the trailers that I think would have added a little more impetus to those scenes had we not already been previewed to them.
Right.
But that is it. I mean, that's the only takeaway that I have as far as a con. Hey,
go ahead. Just from, and I understand that I don't know how much location shooting they did on this, but just from a quasi-studio brat point of view, the desert scenes kind of looked... it was kind of a little obvious that they were on a soundstage in a couple of places. But that's okay. that's just me having been, you know, grown up, you know, studio adjacent for most of my life and having seen, you know, bits and pieces of how the sausage was made thanks to my dad. That kind of took me out of it a bit. Guys?
Yeah.
I kind of did the same thing. I'm sorry,
there was silence there for a second. I'm like, did I lose you?
Carrie muted me, that's what it was. No.
You know what,
no,
Mike?
I did. No, I walked back to my car out of the theater, and I'm like, okay, let me go and think of all the negatives now, get them out of the way. And that, you know, 2 minute walk back to my car, I'm sitting there thinking, I really struggled to find negatives. And I am a DC apologist, so I will, you know, defend DC to my dying breath, but I will also call garbage garbage. There was some good things in Suicide Squad, but there was a lot of stuff I thought was just utter garbage in the movie. And if it's bad, I'm gonna call it bad. But this movie, I struggled. I mean, I remember getting in my car and the people next to me getting in their car, I thought I was like nuts. But I remember screaming like, "Holy crap, DC, you did it." I mean, I remember screaming that in my car because I was all by myself.
And I'm just
thinking, that guy is an idiot. I'm like, they did it. They finally did it. They did it good. They did it well.
Yeah, they definitely have what I think will be a universally loved movie from comic book fans, regardless of what I think. You know, this is one that could easily cross over to Marvel fans. You know, even if they've had a problem with the DC up to this point, especially some that thought that Wonder Woman was the big standout, they're definitely going to be gravitating towards this, and I think it will just have universal appeal, and I think that's fantastic.
I agree.
Yeah, but okay, so as much as I loved Wonder Woman, there was a point, there comes a point every time I watch the movie where they like the slow mo, all the slow mo scenes just looks like they're showing off.
Right.
And I mean, they look pretty, but every time they do a slow mo, it's just like, okay, now you're just showing off, guys. Just go. Just stop with the fun stuff and just go. There was less of that in this movie for me. So, I mean, I realize they were probably showing off a lot because there's a lot of digital stuff that they have to do because they're underwater all the time. But
I can see this breaking the box office feel like there against was Wonder Woman.
What was that?
I could see this breaking the Wonder Woman box office if it continues.
I believe so.
I believe it could, yeah.
But this also does, like you said, set up a blueprint for DC saying, okay, this was a successful movie. How can we copy the formula to the rest of our movies? And because right here, we have it. We have this. Now, obviously, you're going to have some DC fans and some Marvel fans were like, well, this movie in the Marvel Universe was better. This movie was better. They tried too hard to be like Thor or Iron Man. And it just, it didn't, you know, they're going to compare, but, and listen, I've given Marvel their props multiple times. Marvel's a great, what they did for 10 years was great. I will say that. I fear they may struggle in the next phase after Infinity War Endgame. But that's my own, not because I want them to fail, but I've seen the lineup of movies they got coming out, and it's not a very strong lineup, in my opinion. But I
that
think,
we know of.
Right, that we know of, right now, because I know they got The Eternals, they got Doctor Strange 2, they got a Black Widow movie coming out. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't scream at me, I must go see this. But if DC takes the formula they used in this movie and puts it to their rest of their movies coming out, they will have a movie that will say, "I've got to go see this. I've got to see this movie."
Yeah.
So I think they did a good job. So that's kind of a little bit of the future of the movies. We I think there's going to be some sequels to this. I don't expect them to just be a one and done with Aquaman. James Wan is definitely coming back for a second time in this movie for Aquaman. So
I will be looking forward to that.
Oh, me too.
So let's as we're closing up, let's rate this 1 out of 10. How did you think this movie was, Carrie?
Oh, I'm gonna give this like a high 9.
Ooh, 9. Okay. All right. Like just like Batman and Robin.
No. Don't make me come over there, Mike. I swear.
Oh, Rusty, what about you? 1 out of 10. What do you give it? Well, that's good, because I give it a very high 9 as well. So that's very good. We all kind of see similar eyes on this one. Well, that's all for our discussion of Aquaman. Talk to us a little bit more about it in Discord. There's an Aquaman spoilers channel. Go in there for a while until enough people have seen it, and then we'll kind of move it into the main DC Talk channel. But go in there, talk to us, let us know what you think. In closing, I just kind of want to mention a few things. First of all, your final DC quote, DC movie pick of the week, is actually to go and watch the Gotham Season 4 finale. Gotham Season 5 begins here in 2 weeks, I believe, or about a week and a half or so.
A half, yeah.
So go watch the Season 4 finale, because next Sunday when we record, we're going to discuss the Season 4 finale, what we look forward to in Season 5, how we think things are going to change. So check that out. So make sure you watch the Season 4 finale of Gotham this upcoming week. Well, is there anything else before I go through the whole spiel that y'all want to say? Anything you want to let everybody know out there on the network?
Go see Aquaman.
Go see Aquaman.
Run, do not walk. I already said it in Discord. I stand by it.
Run and do not walk.
If you're this far into the recording, you haven't seen Aquaman. I mean,
I'm sad. And you just ruined the movie for you. You need to go in unashamed right now and unknowing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But in the end, listen, we want to hear from you. You can email us, dctalk@randomchatter.com. If you have any thoughts about Aquaman, email us. We want to read them. We could talk about them on the air. So email us, dctalk@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter, @randomchatter. You can find myself, @ObiMikeKenobi. That's OB_MikeKenobi. Carrie, where can we find you?
You can find me at @CarrieBlackfire42. That's KeriBlackfire42.
And Rusty, do you have a Twitter where people can get a hold of you, or are you just hanging around on Discord?
You know, I have not gotten into Twitter, so yeah, Discord is going to be the best place to find me.
So look, another reason for you to get on Discord, so you can talk it up with Brax there. But you can find all of our shows at randomchatter.com. We have a lot to choose from. We have a poll. Carrie, you could take that poll down about who would win Dark Side of Thanos, because we don't need that up there anymore. We already know the answer.
No, there's a new poll up.
Okay, I have to go with the
new haven't
poll.
Been paying attention?
I Jeez. Haven't. I haven't.
Mike, you're fired.
What else is new? but find all our shows on randomchatter.com. If there's a fandom for it, we probably got it. And if you, by the way, apparently there is a lot of nastiness and division going on within the Star Wars fandom right now. If you want some good, neutral, just talking about the goodness of Star Wars, you ought to come on over to
Echo Base.
Come on over to Echo Base or Outer
Force Chatter.
Rim. Force Chatter, have some fun with us. We'll give you some positive encouragement about the fandom. So that was what's on randomchatter.com. Carrie?
Oh, yes. Please spread the word and support us. You can leave us reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to tell your friends, family, coworkers, total strangers, anyone you think might be interested in DC comics and DC movies, television, animation, what have you. Be sure to join us in Discord. We've mentioned Discord a lot in this episode. You can go to randomchatter.com/discord to get to the main lobby and all of the show channels. Access to those are all free. But if you support us through Patreon for at least $1 a month, you get access to all of the shows on the Discord server, and there are tons, including the spoiler channel for Aquaman. So
that's true.
Go to randomchatter.com/Patreon. Throw us a buck. Throw us more. It's whatever it is you want to give. If you got up to $5, there's some special bonus content we throw at you. But come hang out with us. It's a fun time. We fire Mike all the time.
And he comes back. It's a blast.
It never sticks.
No, I stay.
I've stuck with him for who knows how long.
That's true. And she's staying with me.
Love you, man.
The music you hear on this podcast is Shotgun Senorita by Blue Stolly. And as silly as it sounds, all trademarks are owned by the respective owners. Until next time, I leave you with this thought and quote in mind. What could be greater than a king?